Laura Campbell. She's an assistant director of CEDIS, the Center for Education Technology and Interoperability Standards. She has over 15 years experience working in education technology and interoperability standards and has been actively involved in the Open Education Committee since 2009. Laura is currently involved in a number of projects including the Learning Resource Metadata Initiative with Creative Commons and Open Scotland, a collaborative across sector initiative that aims to raise awareness of open education policy and practice in Scotland. Lorna is one of the Open Knowledge Foundation's community coordinators in Scotland, and she blogs regularly about all aspects of open education practice. So again, we have nearly 25 minutes, and then a question and answer. So
okay, please. Thank you very much. What I'm going to be talking about this afternoon is another community initiative, but it's a very, very different community initiative from the kind of ones that we've been hearing about. I think to some extent, perhaps, this presentation will chime more with Padmini's presentation this morning when she was talking about the impact of open access on modes of publishing. What I'm going to be talking about is open education and the drive towards more openness in education. And Open Scotland is a very practical collaborative initiative which aims to promote open education policy and open education practice in Scotland. Before I do that, I'm just going to give a very, very quick introduction to CETIS, the organisation I work for. We are the Centre for Education Technology, Interoperability and Standards, and we're a national UK advisory centre providing strategic, technical and pedagogical advice on educational technology and standards to funding bodies, standards agencies, government institutions and commercial partners, which doesn't make us sound that exciting, but hopefully we do some interesting work. CETIS is a collaboration between the Universities of Bolton and the Universities of Heriot-Watt, and we have three staff based here in Scotland. I actually work for the University of Bolton, but I live and am based in Glasgow. And we have other staff in Edinburgh. We have a wide range of strategic and technical expertise. These are just some of the areas that we're active in the moment. Areas that I'm particularly active in are open educational resources, MOOCs, vocabulary management, metadata, resource description, digital repositories, and all these things I think have an impact on the open space online. We work with a wide range of other organisations and partners, both nationally and internationally. These are just some of the organisations that we're working with at this point in time, some of which have already been mentioned today. And one of the organisations that we've done a lot of work with over the years is an organisation called the DISC. Now, the DISC were formerly a government quango, but last year they transformed themselves into a charity, and they're focused on supporting digital technologies for education and research, which is really the area that they've always been active in, but they've just changed the way they're constituted. One of the things that they used to do a lot of was funding development programmes in all areas of embedding technology in education. And one of the programmes that they managed was called the UK Open Educational Resources Programme. Now, can I just ask how many people have heard of the UK OER programme? That's really interesting, considering it's called the UK OER programme. The UK OER programme was actually funded by HEFCE, the Higher Education Funding Council for England, between 2009 and 2012. And over that period, they invested over £10 million in these programmes. The programmes were managed by the DISC and the Higher Education Academy and supported by a number of organisations, including CETIS. We provided the strategic technical advice to the programmes and we worked with the individual projects. At the end of the programme, we also synthesised the outputs of the programmes and we actually used Floss Manual software to write a collaborative book disseminating the outputs of these programmes. And we did put a Creative Commons licence on it, so we took a different approach, but we worked with the developer of Floss Manuals to do that. So I can talk to you about that if you're interested. This £10 million funded over 80 projects in English higher education institutions between 2009 and 2012. And although the primary aim of the project, or the programme rather, was to release a vast amount of open educational resources. So to take existing educational content and put open licences on it and just get it out there onto the open web. Really, what this funding was supposed to do was to change practice and to embed open education practice within higher education institutions. All the resources that were produced were tagged with a programme tag, UKOER, and deposited in the National Repository, in the Joram National Repository. And interestingly, 2 years after the end of that programme, that hashtag has still been used. And while it's notoriously hard to measure the impact of technology innovation funding initiatives, it's really interesting standing here 2 years down the line and seeing that this actually does seem to have had an impact. Open education policy and open education practice is much better embedded in England. There's much greater awareness of open educational resources in English higher education institutions than there is in Scotland. And I think that's primarily as a result that we didn't have this pump priming funding. However, that's not to say that there haven't been some really interesting innovative examples of open education practice right across the Scottish education sector. And I just quickly want to run through a few examples. Napier University has developed what they call their 3E framework, which is a technology enhanced learning framework. Now, they don't actually promote this specifically as an open educational resource. This is just something that they built to meet their own purposes. However, they licensed it with Creative Commons licenses, so it can be reused. It's already been picked up by other institutions throughout the UK. And I heard just the other day, it's also been used by a college in Glasgow. So this has got life out with its original institution. Glasgow Caledonian University, as far as I know, is the only university in Scotland which provides its students and staff with guidelines on developing and using open educational resources, and it actively encourages its staff to use and develop open education resources. And again, can I just ask if there are anyone, how many people here either use or create open educational resources? Again, not many, one or two. Which, considering we're talking about online communities and open practice, you would hope that this is something that we could actually really start moving towards. And I was interested again this morning about Padmini talking about, you know, we have a responsibility as digital citizens to get involved with contributing to Wikipedia. Well, I would also argue that we have a responsibility, if we're creating resources with public funding, that those resources are made available to the public. So one of the other things that's interesting about these guidelines is that they are repurposed from policy guidelines developed by the University of Leeds. And those guidelines were developed as a result of the UKOER programme. So you start to see these sort of chains of creativity and reuse that come about through initiatives like this. And of course, we have the MOOCs. Now, we've only had one mention of MOOCs so far today, which I think is really interesting, because MOOCs have been getting a huge amount of press recently, massive open online courses. They're going to absolutely transform education. Traditional higher education is dead. We're all going to be taking MOOCs. One of the things that's interesting about MOOCs is they're not actually open. They're free. They're not really open. Very few MOOCs use openly licensed content. It's not to say they can't, but very few of them do. Now, in terms of MOOCs in Scotland, it's been quite interesting, because although there's not much work going on in the area of open educational resources, Scotland have been quite far ahead when it comes to getting involved with the development of MOOCs. And Edinburgh University, I believe, was the first university in the UK to sign up with Coursera. And in their first year, they attracted over 300,000 students to, I think it was, six MOOCs that they ran on a wide range of topics, covering everything from philosophy to digital culture to equine nutrition. And of course, got a huge amount of press about this, and very interestingly, also published a lot of the results and the analytics from these courses. And of course, we now also have FutureLearn, initiative set up by the Open University, and the universities of Edinburgh, Glasgow and Strathclyde are partners in FutureLearn. Now, these are very interesting initiatives, but they are commercial initiatives. Coursera and FutureLearn are commercial companies. They might be free, but the content they use is not actually open. And interestingly, one of the MOOCs that Edinburgh delivered with Coursera, E-Learning and Digital Culture, is also delivered as a face-to-face MSc. And the resources used for the MSc are actually more open than the resources used on the Coursera course. You can actually go onto the course blog for the MSc and all the resources are there. You can't do that with the Coursera one. You've got to log in, you've got to register, there's no license on them. So there's a lot of big questions about MOOCs, but one of the things that we can't deny is that they are in the public domain and they have sparked a public debate about technology and education. And like them or loathe them, I think that's quite good because they can always be used as a Trojan horse to actually start talking about real openness in education. Moving on to the college sector, one of the interesting initiatives we have in the college sector is the Resource Repository, which is a repository of open educational resources for the college sector. Now, this is a really interesting and a really ambitious project. I think it's yet to take off. Would you say that's fair? I think it has promise, certainly, but I think there's quite a lot of culture change required to really encourage the college sector to start sharing resources, but certainly the platform is there, ready and waiting. Another area of open education practice where there's been a huge amount of interest in Scotland is open badges. And recently, the Scottish Funding Council provided funding to support the Open Badges for Scottish Education Group, which is run by the JISC Regional Support Centre in Scotland. And that's been a very, very successful group. And rather bizarrely, the Funding Council has just announced they will no longer be funding it. Don't know why that decision was taken, but it was. It's even more unusual in that the Scottish Qualification Agency last year announced a formal intention to work with Mozilla, who are behind the Open Badges initiative, and with the Open Badges and Scottish Education Group. And what they really want to do is to encourage innovative approaches to assessment practices. So this is not the qualifications agency saying, you must do this, you must use open badges. What they're saying is, think about it. Think about new ways that you can start to accredit learning. And certainly I think this is a very positive step, because quite often when we talk about open education, when we talk about open access, when we talk about open scholarly practice, the one thing that gets left behind is assessment. Or if you do talk about it, it's over there, it's a separate thing. So I think it's really good to see that there's been so much interest in open badges and other forms of open assessment practice.
I think you need to explain what it actually involves.
Open badges, open badges are a form of recognising achievement online. There are various different ways of doing it. The Mozilla Open Badges is the probably the most widely recognised initiative, in that they provide a technology platform where you can start to accredit your badges and store them. They have backpacks where you can sort of collect all your badges. Probably the thing to do is, if you want to talk about open badges, Graham Arnott here as well is your man for that. But I'd be quite happy to come back and talk about that a bit afterwards if you're interested in it. I should add, it's not my primary area of expertise, but it is. It's interesting that it really has grabbed people's attention, I think, right across, not just within universities, but within colleges and also in the school sector. And Ian at the back there as well has been involved in the use of badges for the school sector. Look at that, see that buck passing there? It's also interesting to see organisations out with the formal education sector engaging with the education community. And of course, I don't really need to tell you about the Wikimedia UK initiative. That's why we're all here today. But I think the fact that we have people like Ali and like Padmini here is really important. And I've been so encouraged by the way the Wikimedia initiative has been engaging with education. And Graham recently wrote an excellent blog post summarising the whole raft of Wikimedia UK's activities within Scottish education, which I could highly recommend that you go and have a look at. Another organisation that's been quite active in engaging with open education in Scotland is the Open Knowledge Foundation. Now, the Open Knowledge Foundation is a non-profit organisation which was founded in Cambridge in 2004, which promotes open knowledge, open data and open content. It's not specifically focused on open education, but open education is very much part of that. And Scotland has an Open Knowledge Foundation group, which Graham and I are both community coordinators of, and that's just a voluntary initiative. Anyone can get involved in that. And we have regular meetings in both Glasgow and Edinburgh, which are free to attend. Anyone is welcome to come along to participate, to contribute. And we've had a wide range of topics covered in recent events. Some of the topics that have recently been covered are Glasgow Future Cities Project, the Open Street Map Initiative, Open Badges again, the Digital Commonwealth Project, which focuses a lot on digital storytelling around the around the Commonwealth Games, publishing digital content at the National Library of Scotland, and all sorts of other. We even had, was it Open Source Furniture and Open Source Architecture at the last two events in Glasgow, which were fascinating conversations. So there's a lot going on right across the open education space in Scotland. And this is another quite recent initiative that's landed in Scotland. It's been ongoing for quite some time. The Learning Resource Metadata Initiative is a Gates Foundation funded project led by Creative Commons and the Association of Educational Publishers in America. And the aim of this project is to build a technical standard which will make it easier to publish, discover, and deliver educational content on the web. So basically what it's trying to do is to develop a standard to describe educational resources in such a way that the search engines will pick them up. Because at the moment it's difficult to find specifically educational resources just using the search engines. And CETAs have recently been commissioned to undertake this work on behalf of Creative Commons. So this work is now happening in Scotland. So hopefully that will make a difference to finding open educational resources on the web. So although you've got all these really interesting and innovative examples of open education practice going on right across the Scottish education sectors, and we're not just talking about higher education, we're talking about the college sector, the school sector as well, there's been no large-scale funding initiatives, there's been no attempts to join up some of this practice, and there's been nothing in the way of policy directives coming down either from the Funding Council or at government level. And it all just feels a bit disjointed. And this was the impetus that brought these four organisations together to form the Open Scotland Initiative. So we have CETIS, the Scottish Qualifications Authority, the JISC Regional Support Centre in Scotland, and the Association for Learning Technologies Scotland Special Interest Group. And Open Scotland is a collaborative cross-sector initiative that aims to raise awareness of open education, encourage the sharing of open educational resources, and explore the potential of open policy and practice to benefit all sectors of Scottish education. And one of the first things we did was to try to get the attention of various education authorities and agencies and institutions in Scotland. And what we did was we held a meeting, the Open Scotland Summit, in Edinburgh last June, which brought together key thinkers and policy makers to explore the potential development of open education policy and practice in Scotland. That's just some of the people who were involved. We did get people coming along from the government and the Scottish Funding Council, but we also had people from Out With Scotland who came and presented case studies and talked about their experience of open education. So we had lightning talks focusing on open data, open source education, the inevitable MOOCs, the UK OER programme, and we had two fascinating case studies from Scandinavia and Wales. I don't know if some of you might have been aware last year that the Welsh universities issued a statement. They came together and issued a statement that they intended to work towards, or they intended to work within open education policies and practices. How that will translate in practice, I'm not quite sure yet, but it was quite a powerful statement that the universities were able to come together to agree that they would work more openly. The Scandinavian model is also very interesting because what's happened there is a range of Scandinavian countries have come together. So Norway, Sweden, Finland, Iceland are involved as well. I'm not sure if Denmark's involved. They have come together to form a network, a Scandinavian network, to promote open education resources, and open education policy. At the summit in Edinburgh, we also had a keynote from Dr. Cable Green, who is the Creative Commons Director of Global Learning, who presented the business and policy case for open educational resources. Cable's keynote's available on YouTube, as are all the other presentations from the day, all available under open license, of course. And we spent a large part of the summit focusing on how openness can help to address the strategic priorities that are currently facing education, some of which have relevance not just within higher education, but more widely across the education sector. And in particular, we focused on the government's big ticket strategic agenda. So these are the issues that the education minister wants to solve. These are the things that the government is concerned about at the moment in education. So post-16 education, knowledge transfer, curriculum change, and school, in particular, school, college, and university articulation. And we spent a large part of the day discussing how greater openness in education can actually start to address some of these issues. We also discussed the potential of developing an open declaration for Scotland. This is the Paris OER declaration, which was published by UNESCO in 2012. And what happened was that UNESCO sent a questionnaire to heads of government all over the world to ask them what they did to support open education resources and open education practice within their jurisdiction, and to request that they sign up to this declaration. Now, as far as we know, that survey never reached Scotland. So we discussed the possibility of, can we create a Scottish open education declaration that might be more meaningful to our particular situation? And people felt that this was a very useful thing to do, but that rather than focus specifically on OER, we should focus on open education much more widely. So that was last year. What we've been doing since then is basically just trying to keep open education on the agenda, both within our institutions and politically at government level. We have the Open Scotland blog, which we use to disseminate news about open education, good examples of open education practice, and relevant events, so, such as this one. We also have a hashtag, of course. Every cause needs a hashtag. It's not just our hashtag. Anyone's free to use that. If you're running an event, if you're doing anything that you think would be of interest to the open education community, please take that hashtag, use it. It's free, it's out there on the open web. And we also just last week finally published the first draft of the Scottish Open Education Declaration. And this is based on the work of UNESCO, but it has been adapted so that it does focus on open education more widely and not just on open educational resources. It is a public draft. Anyone can go and comment on it. It's online, and we've used the open source Comment Press plugin to enable anyone to contribute on that. It's not locked down, so if you have any interest in open education, I would very much encourage you to have a look, to get involved in the conversation there. And what we're hoping is that if we can get enough momentum behind the declaration, then perhaps the government will actually start to sit up and take notice. And just very quickly to finish off, we have a number of events coming up in the pipeline. If you're interested in learning more about this community initiative, myself and Joe Wilson from the Scottish Qualification Authority will be doing a free webinar at the beginning of April. We'll be presenting at the OER 14 conference at the University of Newcastle, which is definitely the main gathering of researchers around OER. And we will have a second Open Scotland event in Edinburgh on the 3rd of June, which we've just actually nailed down the date and the venue for that, so we'll be disseminating more information about that shortly. If you want to get involved, please keep an eye on the Open Scotland blog. I would very, very much encourage you to comment on the Scottish Open Education Declaration. If you're doing anything that you think would be of interest to the wider community, we really welcome guest blog posts for the Open Scotland blog, and some people here have already contributed to that blog. And of course, follow the Open Scot hashtag on Twitter. I just want to finish with a quote from Cable Green. This was a quote taken from the keynote that he gave in Edinburgh last year. And it's interesting because it's quite a polarising quote. Cable said that the opposite of open is not closed, the opposite of open is broken. Now, I know that some people feel that this is a bit polemical, evangelical, and I think maybe perhaps it is. But I think it's also quite a nice call to arms as well, and I think it's good to I think provoke a reaction and start make people thinking about open education and why, in fact, we can't be more open with our education resources and with our education practice. Okay.
Thank you very much, Lorna. We have time for
Hi, Lorna, thank you so much for that presentation. Very, very interesting. I'm on a bit of a learning curve now. I'm thinking, right, I really did have a think about some of these issues. I was very interested in that polarising quote, actually, that you showed just before this slide. Yes, if you could put it up again. I think, speaking as something of a dialectician and, coming from psychology theory as well, those kinds of issues are pretty difficult to kind of manage as just it's either this or it's this, because it's not.
Absolutely,
it's other
it's
things
much
as well.
More nuanced.
Yeah, absolutely, and just to kind of refer back to Mike and Zoe's panel earlier, when they were talking about knowledge requiring some sort of psychological state and some sort of psychological component, I think that this is an issue actually that is highly emotive.
Absolutely.
And in thinking about this, actually, this relates to a lot to what Ali and Hermine were talking about this morning, when they were noting a number of different kinds of anxieties around the notion of open.
Absolutely.
And my kind of question would be, if I try and frame this in some sort of question, would be, okay, well, what is open if it's kind of different from something like the notion of public or the notion of free, for example, because I think that those three things are very different. So where did these kinds of community projects fit in with notions of public and notions of free?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole definition of open, particularly within the education space, is quite fraught. And I deliberately didn't go there because you could do a whole presentation on that. People have got very different opinions of what constitutes an open educational resource, what open really means, what's a true definition of open. I don't think there is. I think it's kind of like, it's a bit of a blind alley if you go down that way. You can have lots of very, very interesting discussions, but at the end of the day, I don't really care what your definition of open is. If it disagrees with my definition of open, I think just the fact that we're discussing that is useful and it's powerful. Some people will say that in order for a resource to be open, you have to be able to repurpose it. So it's no good sticking a Creative Commons license on a PDF, for example, because you can't repurpose that. The software that you use has got to be open as well. Other people will sort of say, put an open license on it, fine, I don't care. Other people will say it's not open unless it's a particular type of open license. Huge range of debate there. So I think it's very difficult to pin that down. And I think a lot of the time it doesn't matter too much, but I think there are instances where it does, and I think the whole MOOC thing is very interesting because MOOCs are quite often being touted as being open education, but they are very, very locked down. The issue of free is very relevant there as well, because open educational resources are not free. Somebody has to produce them. There's a labour cost involved. By and large, the somebody producing the open educational resources will be employed in an education institution, whether it's a school, whether it's a college, or whether it's a university. Obviously, there are people out with those institutions that do create OERs, but by and large, those are the people creating open educational resources. It's their labour, that produces it, that's where the cost lies. And again, there's all kinds of interesting aspects there about the value of labour. You will quite often hear discussion of will greater openness in education damage things like tenure, like your standing as an academic? There's all kinds of, getting back to the anxieties there, there's counter arguments about if you're being paid by public funds, then shouldn't all the resources you create be publicly available, because it's public funding, it's our taxes that pay for it. So there are all kinds of very, very thorny arguments in there, and I think we're cheating a little bit by kind of skating over the top of those, because we're trying to get to a point where any kind of open education is more publicly acknowledged within Scotland. So we are slightly dodging a lot of these very interesting, very thorny issues.
Mm. So are you mainly referring to coursework in terms of being open? Because
anything
teaching, I cannot just open my class at the university.
Some people have. Well, and so people do. And the
so
example
would that also be an example of open ed?
Yeah. Well, a good example is one that I mentioned this morning, which I would highly recommend you look at, which is the Phonar course at the University of Coventry. And Jonathan Worth, who taught that, did just open it. And another good example of that is there's a course run by a guy called Jim Groom in the US called DS106, which is a kind of digital culture course. And again, he did that as well. He just opened his course. So he has students within his institution, paying students who are there within his institution, but there are thousands of people all over the world as well who also get involved in this. And it is a very, very rhizomic way of running a course.
I think what I meant is it then the free part or the open part, does it happen online, or can I just invite 300 people into?
Well, that you would have to negotiate with your institution. By and large, it's happening online, but people have done some really creative things with openness in a face-to-face context.
There's a really interesting initiative that's happening. I think it's mostly happening down south at the moment, but not so much in Scotland, but it would be great if it did start happening in Scotland, where I can't remember the name of it right now, so I apologise. Where the students are invited to vote for the best lectures that they've attended, and then out of the best lectures that get the ones that get the most votes, then 10 of them get put on for free, open to everyone.
That's at Sheffield University.
Mm-hmm.
Sheffield University have
yeah.
a post, a space in the web where they have most inspiring
mm-hmm.
lectures. So we have over there, and then over there. Yes.
And I think I have two thoughts about what we are talking about in one question. The first thought is that my perception of knowledge is that it's always broken. So if it is broken, the question is, what is it when it's not open? For me, when something is not open, it is just frozen.
Mm-hmm.
What is knowledge anyway? Taking the example of Sissy in the airport
mm-hmm.
trying to detect a bomb, she might actually find a bomb and through the scanner, and then she might have a second thought about whether it is a bomb or not. So she opens the suitcase and checks and sees that this is a mechanism that if you press a button, it will explode. So it should be a bomb. But then they are looking for that person who owns this suitcase. And he comes and says, well, I'm a professor, and this is not a bomb. It's a science project. So it is a bomb, but it is a science project as well. So what is knowledge?
Yes.
The other thought is regarding the free versus open
mm-hmm.
issue. I think that if we think about it, nothing is free, especially not education. Even if the MOOCs were free, absolutely free, what does it take for someone to take a MOOC?
Mm-hmm.
So someone must have, first of all, a level of education in first place to be able to attend a MOOC and understand. it's not taken for granted all over the world. So that education wasn't for free either.
Mm-hmm.
So education is not free anymore.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So my question is, according to your knowledge and your experience, what does it take, that's much more practical and less philosophical, what does it take for a university to get involved in MOOCs? Where do we start? How do we look for the resources?
Well, I mean, one of the things that has promoted a lot of universities to get involved with MOOCs in particular, not open education resources, but with MOOCs, is publicity. They see it as a way to make money, basically. That's it. That's why they do it. It's a good way to be ahead of the game, to do something that your competitors aren't doing, and to get lots of advertising and new students. And Edinburgh have admitted that one of the reasons they wanted to be the first in Scotland to do this, in fact, first in the UK, is they would get publicity. And they did. They've got a massive amount of publicity.
A counter argument to that, I suppose, is because I think you mentioned knowledge transfer.
Mm-hmm.
I think, of course, it's a matter of publicity, but what isn't as well? And education, as far as I know, I'm paying to be here.
Yes, it's a commercial transaction.
So it's a transaction anyway, and it involves marketing as well.
Absolutely.
So let's say that MOOCs are just a part of this. In terms of knowledge transfer, I think because they're so massive, they give the space to facilitate knowledge transfer among other things as well. So we see people who are not in the academia, who are within businesses, or they're working out there, they're practicing this knowledge, they attend the MOOCs and open very interesting conversations. So I think in the MOOCs, the interactions are the most interesting part.
Oh, absolutely.
Not the material itself.
Mm,
so
absolutely.
We have open material, but that's not the best part.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, what this comes down to is content is not education. You know, but content is just part of that. So, and again, you know, the classic example of that is MIT, the MIT Open Courseware Initiative. MIT said, we're going to give all our resources away free. And everyone went, that's mad, what are you doing? But of course, you're not giving away MIT education. That's a completely different thing. And, you know, there is, I still think, you know, this could, you know, when I talk a lot about open educational resources, and people say, content's not education, I know that. But it's an important part in facilitating and getting these discussions started. And there's a lot of interesting discussion going on about students as co-creators in the open education space. Some of the things you're saying about MOOCs are interesting, and again, you question what's free and what's open and who is part of that knowledge transfer. Now that we're starting to see the first analytics coming out of these large-scale MOOCs, the profile of students engaging with them is very, very interesting because they are predominantly
men.
They're predominantly aged between about 25 and 35. They almost all have first degrees. A huge proportion of them have second degrees. And it looks like these courses that were supposed to democratize education are really catering for a very, very narrow niche of the global population.
Yes, but again, we are comparing our conclusions. There are 2 points here, we are comparing.
Can you summarize? Because
yes.
We need to give the opportunity to the rest of the people to participate.
Let's just not ignore the very small proportion, which is not just a percentage, but it's a number. There are thousands of people who wouldn't have access to these courses, and they do.
That's true. That's very true. Just because it's a small proportion doesn't mean they're insignificant.
And let's compare our conclusions with the hype of the MOOCs. So some people might say, this is a revolution. It might not be a revolution, but
absolutely.
We can't ignore it either.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thank you.
Summary.
I just want to make one very quick point. My understanding is that the ancient universities have the right any commoner to walk into any lecture.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's my understanding.
That's interesting. I'll have to look into that, actually.
Yeah. That's part of the ancient charter.
That wouldn't surprise me, actually. That wouldn't surprise me now you mention it. I'll have to look into that, see if I can pin that down somewhere.
Well, thank you very much. I think we have space for a short refreshment, if I'm not wrong. Great. Thank you very much again.
Thank you.